Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, your little corner of the Star Wars universe that, it feels like home. And I don't know, but the corporate sector is really making this feel a lot less like home these days. And with me, as he is always, is the ever astute, ever wonderful John Mills.
Who may or may not be a corporate sector authority spy. You never know. The Espos get everywhere, Matt. And who knows? Maybe
God,
I'm a member.
I hate those guys. Man, it's just awful. But no, we're super excited to be back with you. It's so good to be on the airwaves here as Aggressive Negotiations. I just love this little corner of the Star Wars galaxy personally. Before we get started, though, I just wanted to direct your attention to something that has been happening with us here on the Nerd Party. It's very important. We've had a bit of a legal claim against us, and it has actually hit the network substantially. And this is a non-for-profit network. We're just here having a good time. And honestly, what that means is that we need your help. And so go over to GoFundMe.com/TheNerdParty, and you can see how you can help us out. Honestly, every little bit helps us. You can also check us out on Facebook.com/TheNerdParty. Tristan has a wonderful video there as well about what has happened to us, so you can find out more information. But again, GoFundMe.com/TheNerdParty is the main place you can go. Every bit that you can do to help us means the world to us.
It absolutely does, and I know that there have been a couple of people who have commented saying that they're very sympathetic and they wish that we could go into more detail, and we wish we could go into more detail. We can't. What we can tell you is that we understand anybody's skepticism, but all we can do is assure you this is a one-time goal. This is not going toward any sort of operating expenses or anything like that. This is strictly going toward a legal fund where somebody maneuvered it in such a way where it is, if we took it to court, we don't have business insurance and it becomes very complicated. So we do, like Matt said, really appreciate anything that you can do. Even a dollar helps us out big time. So thank you.
Well, and, while you're checking all of that out, you could find us all over the place too. You can help us out on social media by following us at Join Nerd Party on Twitter. Of course, we've also got the show account, which is at the Jedi Masters. Honestly, if you're not following any of those places, please do. Please do. It helps us out. You'll see all the great tweets we've got coming out on both places. And just, we love communicating with you, the listener. It's so much fun. John and I really have a great time being able to talk to you guys over on the at Join Nerd Party, or of course at the Jedi Masters. So you can also find us, like I said, on Facebook at Facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We've got TheNerdParty.com, where while you're over there, go to the contact section. You can choose a show. You can choose Aggressive Negotiations, and you can send John and I an email about maybe your thoughts on whatever it is that we're talking about that week, or maybe you have some ideas that you'd love to hear us chat about, or maybe you just need to get something off your chest and you feel like John and I are the ones to do that too. We're here for you. So we're a Star Wars shoulder to cry on.
Yes. We're a Star Wars shoulder to cry on, a Star Wars friend to sit in a pub and grab a malted beverage with. Be it a milkshake or anything else, we're here for
it. Or a Colt 45, just like our good man.
Oh, yes. Oh, Billy D.
That's where I thought you were going with malted beverage. I was
I can tell you that even I can't really handle a Colt 45. So, that was a pretty serious drink back in the day. So,
yeah. But so John, we have Solo coming out. Which both you and I, we talked a little bit about last week, watching the latest trailer and being excited for. I'm personally staying away from any other, I have not watched any commercials for it. I don't want to see anything else. I just want to go in and see the movie. Now, I did buy this adorable little Pop figure, though, I've got to say, with Chewie with the goggles on. So I'm super excited about that.
See, I'm still afraid that those Pop vinyl figures are going to come alive like the little Zuni doll in Trilogy of Terror. And it's going to be a whole thing, and you're going to all your little Pop vinyls are going to come alive one day, and you're going to be calling for help. You're going to be like, sorry, I don't have any. I'm perfectly safe over here. So,
well, let's hope not. But so we figured what would be fun to do is to go back and look at the original Brian Daley books and talk about his take on Solo. And of course, you know, this is the first person beyond Lucas who ever got a hold of the character of Han Solo and told more stories about him. And of course, as well, this is the backstory for Solo. This is before A New Hope. And honestly, one of the first things really done in quote unquote the EU, the extended universe, were the Brian Daley books as well. So, all of that said, it felt like the best time to go in, and we're going to be looking at Han Solo Star's End. And so, John, I had a question for you. I think I know the answer to this one, but had you read this before?
When I was a kid, if it had the Star Wars imprint on it, I begged for it, I pleaded for it, and my dad was more than happy to read along with me. And so, yes, I had the Han Solo books. I had the Lando Calrissian books, too. And, you know, my dad would read them, and then I'd read them. But, I was such a young kid that memory fades. I think Star's End is the only one I managed to finish when I was a kid. I had the other ones, and I think I read some of Han Solo's Revenge. I remember being enraptured with the cover. And then it's one of those things where everybody who's a collector knows what this is like, where you get the thing and it sits on your shelf and then you're kind of like, whatever. So I didn't really get to the books to read them until I was an adult. So this is revisiting, but they've always been there. They've always shaped, the perception of Han, as it were, whether it's just an ingrained sort of shadow memory lurking back there about pages that I read here or there. I think Brian Daley, you rightly call out, he really shaped Han Solo and people's perception of Han Solo back in those days. And it is interesting as well when you pair it with the fact that he wrote the Star Wars radio drama. And there are a lot of things and turns of phrases in Han Solo at Star's End that jump out as, oh, okay, he's using the same terminology, especially for Han. And what's amazing is some of Han's dialogue, and I know I'm rambling on here, I can hear Perry King, the actor from the radio drama, saying these lines even more than I can hear Harrison Ford saying them, because the phrasing is so similar. So, but these books were not in your life when you were younger, or, how did you first happen across them?
Well, I first happened across them when a young, intrepid, good-looking man decided that I needed to read them and sent me a copy of all three of them. In the mail. And this just esteemed colleague of mine made that decision, and I'm forever in his debt now that he did. And so, of course, I'm speaking of the one and only John Mills.
Well, he certainly did sound handsome. I was hoping you were going to go there.
Yeah, he did. You know. I mean, really, really, guys, if you haven't seen a picture of John, you're doing yourself a disservice. But
imagine the Joker without makeup. There you go.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Without all the makeup on, that's pretty much it. But the mouth is the same.
Pretty much.
So I had never read these, and it was one of those things where, I am like you, obviously, too. When I first found Star Wars, I was a kid, and I saw all three for my birthday. I've recounted that story before, and after that, I was done. Like, I was sold. I was drinking the George Lucas Kool-Aid. I loved Star Wars, and I picked up pretty much anything. So I got the novelizations, and then I, of course, by that point, not too long after that, I started finding the other books, and part of that for me was Timothy Zahn. And so that's where I ended up starting my love affair with Star Wars books. Mm-hmm. And I ended up missing the Brian Daley books, or, you know, the old Han Solo books and that kind of stuff. So, or the old Lando books mm-hmm. that they had done and things like that. I just didn't ever get around to reading those. So coming into this, it was fascinating for me to just kind of be able to see it with, you know, an older person's eye, you know, but also putting myself in the mindset of, you know, he has very little to go on of what Star Wars is. And mm-hmm. so him writing in this universe, I thought that was the most interesting thing, because I wanted to ask you, does part of this for you as you reread it, and especially now, and obviously with everything we know about Star Wars, does it feel like bits and pieces from different types of sci-fi? Like, for part of me felt like this feels like a Mazoff's Foundation trilogy with some of the like all the corporate sector stuff. And I was really thinking about that, but then there were other pieces of sci-fi. I just felt like it really did have that like 1960s, 1970s sci-fi feel to it. And I found that really fascinating, and it didn't bring me out of it. It didn't make me feel like, oh, this isn't Star Wars. It just, I could really pinpoint the time and place with which, you know, this was written, and, you know, obviously the little bit of Star Wars we had at that point.
You know, I think that is a very great observation that, yes, this does read and feel like the source material that inspired Lucas as much as anything else. I didn't put my finger on it as foundation, but there is a definite pulpy edge to this. I can say, comparing where Howard Chaykin was going with the comics post-Star Wars and where Daley went with these novels, both of them were focused and obsessed with Han. I think Daley is much more in the vein of what Lucas was after in terms of these things. And I think also the brilliance of these stories is setting them, they're prequels. Brian Daley immediately removed himself from the trouble of speculating what happened between Star Wars and Empire, or Star Wars and Jedi, or Empire and Jedi, or anything like that. He took himself out of that equation. And, you know, Splinter of the Mind's Eye falls very much into that trap. Oh, Splinter of the Mind's Eye, this is what happens after Star Wars. Oh, wait, no, I guess not. His books are inviolate when the sequels come out. So they can stand there, and there's nothing in them that contradicts anything, because nothing's said on screen that has anything to do with them or that time period.
What became so interesting to me was that, you know, I was wondering myself, I wonder why the Empire isn't a bigger deal in these books.
Ooh.
But then I also thought, you know, when I put into light the prequels and the idea of like the Trade Federation and stuff, this doesn't feel all that far off from like a mixture between the prequels and the original trilogy. And that's what is so cool about this.
I completely agree with you. And I love the idea of the corporate sector. And I love the idea, because the thing is, there's even an allusion to it. And we've talked about this before. In Empire Strikes Back, Lando specifically says, we fall out of the jurisdiction of the Empire. There was very much a more complicated view of the galaxy and where things were. I mean, the Tion hegemony, or Tion, sorry, because Lord Tion actually appears in the radio dramas as well. But there's this idea that the Empire exists, and the Empire is big, and the Empire is awful, but the Empire isn't all galaxy encompassing. And, you know, we have that now with the unknown regions and stuff like that. But I think that it illustrates a very interesting trap that the sequels find themselves in, the sequel trilogy finds itself in. And I think this illuminates it, of this idea that there were only ever two factions. And so it makes there is Empire or First Order, and then Republic or Rebellion. Whereas this gets to the root of, you know, especially in the Clone Wars too, that you go into, that is, there's Jedi, there's Sith, there's Witches of Dathomir, there's Trade Federation, there's Banking Clan, there's And the Empire has to find a way to work within these bounds, within this structure, in order to function. And it actually even adds another interesting layer that Palpatine's play for the Death Stars and those sorts of things aren't just about killing the rebels. They're about expanding the Empire and taking over these other sectors, which I think is a really interesting idea.
Right, because, I mean, I think sometimes, and it's not that we don't remember, it's just, I feel like sometimes even I as a fan sometimes forget that, you know, the Senate doesn't leave until midway through A New Hope.
Right.
Like, that's when it's disbanded. And so the galaxy at large is very different. And we even see that. One of the cool things I love how this book also feels a lot like some of the things we saw in Rebels. You know, with the different factions there. You've got pirates and you know, got different places in the galaxy, and like the way in which the Empire is trying to get people under their thumb, you know, and you see that in you know, some of the books that have come out now too, like Catalyst and things like that that take place in that time period. So I mean, what was so fun about these books is, and this first one for me was seeing the way in which it still feels kind of relevant. But not only that, you could also see how Daly himself was writing the character to put him in a place where he would be able to be ready to start making the turn. Because, you know, he's really, forgive my language here, but he's kind of a cold-hearted bastard here. And the only person he really has a heart for at all is Chewie. And it fits so well with the character that we get in A New Hope. And so I felt like, you know, Daly is really, he's showing that there's slight, tiny micro fractures in the armor of Han, but not many at this point, and it's great.
Yeah, that's a great point too, because he does find himself, he has to forward Han incrementally, and it's sort of the same thing where you find with what I think some people rebel against subconsciously with Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, is since that's set before Raiders, it's a slightly different Indy, and he has to get closer to that point that you see him in Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Daly does a really fine job of teasing out the fact that we all know Han's going to make that turn in Star Wars. And actually, there's a line where it's called out that his seeming cynicism, here it is, here's the quote. "A callous exterior isn't an uncommon way of protecting ideals, Captain. It hides the idealists from the derision of fools and cowards. But it also immobilizes them so that, in trying to preserve their ideals, they risk losing them." So there's your immediate hint dropped right there that there's something waiting to go off in Han that's going to make him noble. And of course, we as an audience all know it's the encounter with Luke and Ben that and the princess that changes him.
And what I really liked here is the way in which there's one person that he's loyal to. There's one person that matters above all else. You know, there's only one person that Han puts above himself, and that's Chewie.
Yeah.
And I thought what was nice is, one, Chewie gets a lot to do in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But two, we also really see Han caring for this person, and we don't completely understand why. But there are allusions to why, and mm-hmm. it's a really nice way to kind of deepen that relationship as you come into the original trilogy. You know, these characters have this long history with each other way before, you know, when we see them, you know. So I really appreciated that. And what's so funny was this is reflected a little bit in Last Shot. They take some of Brian Daly's feelings about how, you know, Chewie just kind of rolls his eyes at some of the things that Han does or says, and use that. And because, you know, I just love it. You know, Chewie loves Han, but he also thinks he's kind of full of himself You know, and he's not afraid to like show that. And I just, their interplay is great. And I think it's one of the things that reading this, I just am really looking forward to then in the Solo movie. And this book just kind of like whet the appetite big time for that relationship.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Daly has a really good handle on the idea that all of us from time to time find ourselves in friendships where somebody might look at Chewie, or if we're the Chewie in the friendship, or if we're the Han in the friendship, and somebody might look at that and say, what are you guys, why do you even hang out? Like, here's Chewie, who's nothing but noble. He's the literal shaggy dog. He's the loyal, loving, constant companion. And here's Han, the gruff exterior, quips about everything. Everything's, stupid galaxy. You don't know what it's like, and it's so tough and everything. But Chewie, like, you can see, and especially with the way Daly treats them, you can see that Chewie understands what's at Han's core. And that's why he loves him, and that's why he sticks with him, is because he understands who Han really and truly is. And again, I know I keep making reference to it, but there's a specific interchange between Ben and Luke in the Star Wars radio drama that also speaks to that, where Ben specifically says, Captain Solo may put on a gruff exterior and claim these certain things about himself, but there's a Wookiee with him. And that's not something to sneeze at. You know, like he's basically setting up for Luke. He's like, if Chewie's with him, there's something more to him than you think there is. Because Luke's initial reaction is like, what a jerk. And Ben's like, trust me on this one. There's something more to this guy than you think there is, sort of thing. So it's really cool.
That's something that's really, you know, we've only had small bits of the Wookiees, you know, in Star mm-hmm. Wars in general. You know, we've seen them some in Clone Wars. We saw them, obviously, in Revenge of the Sith. We saw a tiny bit in Rebels. But there's so much about Wookiees and their culture that we don't truly understand. And it's one of the things that I'm kind of hoping, again, the Solo movie will expound upon a little bit, give us a greater understanding. And it looks like we, you know, might see that since, you know, there was a part in the trailer that looked a little bit like we might get a little lumpy or something. So who knows?
Or Mala. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. So, but again, this was something that this book, I think, kind of really nailed. Now, I will say, so there are some criticisms of the book for me in mm-hmm. that the language is too colloquial in the sense of it feels too American, like almost 1950s sounding with some of the things that Han will say, and it does bring you out because it's like, okay, that doesn't fit into Star Wars like that, you know. You
mean like saying Godspeed?
There are just definitely things that Han will quip or shout out or whatever, or you know, he'll use a turn of phrase that is specifically from, you know, the 1950s, 60s, or 70s.
Yeah, okay.
That doesn't fit within the Star Wars universe. And it's not his fault because, I mean, there are no rules yet for the Star Wars universe. This is 79. He doesn't know.
Right.
And, but it just, it does, it it doesn't truly jive with Star Wars, but it's not enough to like kill the mood or anything. It's just like,
sure.
It's more like, oh, that's cute, you know, like, oh, that's funny that they thought that was gonna work, but it, you know, it doesn't take me out of the book so much that it ruins the rest of the story. And the only other criticism really that I have of the book too is the aliens that they come up with. You know, like the cat people. I was like, is this a animated series of Star Trek? Mares?
Hey, is one of I like Mares.
Hey, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Mares. I'm saying it was weird that she was in the Star Wars book.
No, but the thing is that that idea comes back in the there was one of the later Han Solo trilogies where you find out his evil cousin or something like that. What was the name of that? The Corellian trilogy, Remember that one?
Oh yeah, Thrakken Solo.
Yeah, and there and yes, ugh, and there. No, but remember, what were their names? It started with an S, Selenians or something like that. But they were cat people. That were neighbors on Corellia or something. That's not the same thing here. But
I'm
like
just
cat people
I'm just saying
back.
there was a reason why I never really read those Corellian books because I read the back of them. They sounded awful. I could be totally wrong.
Oh, that was still in the days back when I was reading every. I hadn't given up at that point.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to read it all. Man. I'm going to read it all.
But you know, I think those two criticisms aside. The only other one that is there is that there's too much technobabble and explaining the science of things, and Star Wars doesn't do that, but Daly doesn't know that.
You know, the one thing I will say is that to defend it is that like even the novelizations can sometimes strain that area, and I think that Daly's also picking up on something that comes, you know, to full fruition in Empire is this idea that the Falcon falls. The Falcon never fails them in Star Wars. It's, you know, it's a hunk of junk. You came in that thing. You're braver than I thought, all of that stuff. So Daly at least knows that he can play with the idea that it's falling apart. Well, if your ship is going to have a problem, you have to have an explanation for what went wrong, you know, like, and especially since you know that Han and Chewie are, you know, we know just from Star Wars, you know, this is their hot rod, basically. And so things will be wired wrong. I'm not discounting what you're saying, but I'm saying that I'm probably more forgiving of it for that reason. The thing that Star's End comes apart during is I'm totally along with it, and comes apart is a very strong way to say it. But basically the ending really sort of is too silly. It's, you know, like it's building up. It's like, oh, where's this going? Oh, my gosh, he's got this power feedback going. Oh, you launched the building into the sky like a rocket. Well, now that's, you know, that is the part to me that's like, that's a little bit too cartoonish, guys, because, yeah, you know, like I know that anything is possible and we're supposed to be childlike and accepting.
And that's
stuff
when
like
the
that.
Super Friends came in.
Right, exactly. But like you blew up a building so that it turned into a rocket. And I did, you know, and I, this is me personally with the way I'm wired. Maybe it's just watching too many movies where this thing doesn't happen. But when they close the door and just let everybody die on the building, I'm like, that's a little much. That's, you know, I know they're evil people, but take them back for trial or something, you know, like do the Batman thing, go get them in trouble, you know, so that they serve jail sentences, but sentencing them to a falling skyscraper that's going to explode on impact, that seems a little too brutal.
Yeah,
me.
See, I was totally on board for that.
I don't know.
I really appreciated that they just let him die because, I mean, who are they going to bring them to? Because
oh, that's actually, you know, that's a fair counterpoint.
The moment that the corporate, you know, sector finds out what's going on and the authority gets that, they're just going to shut them down. They're going to shut them up. They don't care.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I guess I've just been warped somehow through time to expect.
Yeah,
I
feel like
that,
you've been watching way too many Marvel movies, buddy, where nobody dies. Like, you know.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what
Was there anything else that like stood out to you, maybe new for the first time in this reread for you that you hadn't seen before?
I don't know. The Z95 Headhunter being in there.
Yeah, I like that.
That was kind of neat because that's another idea that keeps coming back over time. What was there anything else that jumped out at you?
You know, I did catch in there, and I can understand, you know, when George Lucas changes the scene in the cantina.
Yeah. Oh.
And everybody who grew up with these books would revolt against that because that's not their Han Solo. Their Han Solo is somebody who's kind of a cold-blooded murderer, really.
There's actually a line in it, too, where he says...
yeah, I shoot first. Now.
I shoot first because you don't get to shoot second or something like
right.
that. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That did jump out where it was like, oh yeah.
Which makes sense, but you know, but then I can see where, you know, for Lucas, he doesn't care about any of that stuff. You know, for him, the characters are always what's in his mind, not anybody else's. And so, therefore, when he makes that change, it's not incongruous for him that Han.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
It's still a part where I still, in terms of the change of the film, I think the Blu-ray version is just fine, and I would leave it that way. But I rebelled against it in 97, and I understand the reasoning for it, but at the same time, if somebody's pointing a gun at me with the intent of killing me, then I have every right to shoot them. The reasoning for me is like, I wish I had never heard the reasoning given for it, because I'm like, no, Han was totally justified in doing that because he was going to die otherwise. So that's fine. Yeah. But all of that said, I think that the way that it's cut in the Blu-ray, if that had been how it looked in the 97 and 2004 editions.
Yeah, me
people
too.
Would have been like, wait, oh, his gun went off. You know, so. You know, I will say one thing that jumped out at me, I did write it down, was during an exchange, Han says, we're not the Jedi Knights or Freedom's Sons. And Freedom's Sons is capitalized, and that, including with, you know, corporate sector authority and everything else, jumps out as a more complex galaxy than people sometimes take away from Star Wars.
Yeah, actually, Freedom's Sons reminds me, it brought to mind for me the Partisans. That
Ooh.
Sounded like what, you know, something yeah. that, you know, you would get from Saw Gerrera's group, calling themselves Freedom's Sons, you know.
You're right. Predating the rebellion in a way. Or,
yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Ooh,
so I mean, again, there were moments like that just really fit for me. And I feel like, you know, overall, kind of coming down with my final thoughts on the book, I really enjoyed the book. I thought it was a lot of fun. And, you know, obviously there are things that don't completely jive now.
Yeah.
But all in all, I think it's still a great introduction to the characters of Han Solo and Chewbacca. And a pre, you know, New Hope universe. I don't think it feels too far off. And so I think that, you know, I'd say, you know, this is a good 3.5 out of 5 stars for me as a book. You know, it's definitely, even if you've never read it before, I still think it's worth the read because I just read it for the first time and I don't regret it whatsoever. In fact, I'm glad I did.
I agree. Same rating, 3.5 out of 5. I think that when you realize, as everybody well knows, as everybody on the face of the planet knows anything about the history of Star Wars knows, its massive success took everybody by surprise. To get a book like this, of this quality, turned out essentially to capitalize on that popularity and fill in the gap pre-video game, pre-VHS, pre-everything, you got to keep Star Wars in people's minds, it's a pretty great way to do it. And I think I do think that overall it stands up. I think it's well plotted and I think it's compelling. I like it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Man. Well, I mean, if anybody else wants to talk to you about this book or anything else that you've got going on, where can everybody find you, John?
Oh, well, you can find me online at Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice. You can also find me right here on the network co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler, where we look at the aspects of filmmaking that are sometimes overlooked. And you can find me out there in the ether co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And every so often, Matt, you can find me hanging with you. But why don't you spoil where that is as you let people know where you can be found out there in the ether?
Well, I just like how your moniker is going to be so popular soon. Like, everybody's going to want a piece of Kessel Junkie. But but you can find me online at MattRushing02 on Twitter and Instagram under the same name. I'm here on the network with Dre Kaufman as we're talking about Harry Potter every week. We go through the series one chapter at a time. It's a blast, so make sure you check it out. We are right there with The Goblet of Fire at the moment. So we'll be there for a while. But, you know, it's a great time to catch up, and we just have a blast talking about the series. I'm over on the Trek FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones. Over on The Orb, we are getting back to being much more regular as a podcast, which is fantastic. We're really glad to be back. We're diving into the Deep Space Nine mirror universe right now. So check that out. It's
stuff.
A lot of fun. Yeah,
really
it
good
is.
Stuff. The
really
Orb is.
Is
a great show, everybody. If you like
Thank
Deep Space
you.
Nine,
Thank
you should
man.
Definitely listen to it.
And then over there, too, I'm on the 602 Club, which is our general geek show, and we are not bound or limited by anything other than what we want to talk about that week. So we are choosing from every single franchise that we love and know and can fit in to talk about. It is a just pure joy, geek joy, and John's there frequently talking about things with us, and we have guests from all over the place, from all over the podcasting spectrum to talk about things, so make sure you check it out. And last but not least, you can find me doing a show called Cinema Stories with my friend Courtney, where we talk about film through the lens of faith. But you know, all that said, John, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.